March 2, 2023, it's the Waffle Pedro Show.
I don't know. I think by the time I learn to write, there won't be any problem. There'll probably be too many of them around like that. It's going to take me a year. I think, you know, I'm not sure, but I think it's going to take me 6 months to a year to get something good out of this. Because I'm at the first step now, you know, and unless it snowballs real fast, it's going to take me a little while to get it really strong, but it will be a beginning soon. I'm going to make a beginning soon. And I don't know what I'll add the trumpet until 6 months or maybe 8 months or a year, something like that. By that time, my ideas might be strong enough to be able to write arrangements, you know, and if not write them, to set them, to construct them. Or anyway, I like to develop these things with the quartet, and then when the horn man comes in, we'll be so well set with him until all he'll have to do is just play what he hears, see, which will be.
So get ready. You are about to witness the greatest sports extravaganza of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Foreign Objects!
Pedro Show, happy Thursday. Started off with John Coltrane talking to Michael DeRuyter about writing for a group with a trumpet. He said he wanted somebody like Eric Dolphy, but Eric Dolphy played flute, bass clarinet, alto sax. He did get Freddie Hubbard for Ascension, though. Anyway, December 1st, 1962. And then we had Foreign Object with the eponymous tune, Foreign Object. And because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got aboard here. Brother Bill Woodcock, welcome aboard, Brother Bill.
Wow. Thank you, Brother Watt. What an honor it is to be here with you.
Absolute. Absolute. Right back. And I want to fucking learn the listeners, and myself included, about your journey through music. So please, let's start with you bringing your earliest musical recollection.
Okay, well, I was born up in Eureka, California, up in Humboldt County.
Now, there's two, right? There's two. There's Eureka and there's Wyreka.
Yeah, I was on the coast.
That's the Eureka, right? Because when you're on I-5, right, there's that gas station. I think the town's actually Hilt, but then the next, you know, kind of sizable.
So, yeah, we didn't stay in Eureka very long. My dad was a postal carrier when I was born, and he got a job as a civilian working for the Army, and we moved down to San Francisco in the Presidio. He worked at the Presidio, and we lived in Marin County, and that's where my first musical memory is. Because I know my dad was playing Beatles and Bob Dylan records since day one, but I don't remember any of that. What I remember specifically is hearing Puff the Magic Dragon by Peter Paul and Mary on the coming off the radio.
Yeah, Presidio, it's a lot like where I practiced, the old Fort MacArthur here in Pedro, probably around the same time built, because one time I got to wander around there. Did your pop play?
He didn't. No, he had a guitar in the house.
That's what I was going to ask
you. I saw him play it.
That's what I was going to ask you. In the pad you grew up, was there musical instruments? And there, what was it, acoustic guitar?
It was an acoustic a nylon string guitar. And we moved to Germany when I was really young, and he left it in storage. So when we moved over there, we didn't have an instrument in the house. And then I started getting into Kiss, and I wanted to play bass. I asked my parents, like, will you get an instrument for me? And they wouldn't give me a bass. They got me a really small little steel string acoustic guitar to learn on. And it was just wrong. It was horrible. I hated it.
Well, let's dial wheel back a little. What about in school? Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
Not early in school. Like, I went to Department of Defense Elementary Schools, and they had real, like, generic music classes where we sang, like, The Cat Came Back and This Land Is Your Land and If I Had a Hammer and stuff like that.
There's a connection there because I think the first version of Puff the Magic Dragon was from Pete Seeger, and Pete Seeger used to do Woody Guthrie songs like I Had a Hammer. Wow, everything's connected. Well, what about...
But in high school...
No, I want to stay in the older days. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
That was the King Kong soundtrack by John Barry.
Okay. And what was the first gig you saw?
The first gig I saw was... it was Devo at the Fox Theater in Atlanta in 1981 on the New Traditionalist tour.
Now, Fox Theater, I got to play two gigs there with Minutemen opening for R.E.M. in 85. And I remember there's lights in the overhead that look like stars.
I don't remember that. you mean the whole theater has stars in the overhead?
Yeah, you know, like it was the sky. That's what I remember. I also remember... One of the, I don't know, was the production manager, the road manager, the, you know, whatever, assistant hair tech. But they yelled at us for doing 4 or 5 Creedence songs, one of those gigs. Because I guess, well, we heard the REM guys doing one, so, hey, we know some Creed. And the guy was like, you never play one of those songs without my permission again.
Ooh.
And we were like, well, is this worth, you know. Anyway, we love the band. The four guys in the band were very cool people. But some of that other... Hey, they ended up firing everybody except one of the helper men, Microwave. Anyway, let's stay focused on you here. So they get you this little guitar. They get you this little guitar that you thought was wrong. But what about... How did you learn on it? Did you have a teacher?
No, I didn't learn on it. I just let it collect dust. You know, I remember my mom plunking out the melody to Born Free on it. And I was like, this is just... I want to rock. This is not what I want to be doing. And I didn't see the straight line from that guitar that they gave me to where I wanted to be. So... I think I was maybe 8 years old and really into Gene Simmons, which is, I think, why I wanted to play bass. And even by the time I went to my first concert at Devo, Jerry was my favorite guy in the band. I was players.
Brother Bill, Jerry Casala was on the fucking show a couple weeks ago.
I saw that. I want to listen to it. I haven't gotten around to it.
He's great. He just had, you know, he's 10 years older than me, 75, and he just had a newborn, new shift member.
Wow.
Yeah. But
for him.
Well, the wife's younger, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, so that's bitching, though, to hear you wanted to play bass first, because in the old days, that's where you put your retarded friend. It's like right field. Yeah, arena rock days. You know, in club music, with the movement, us and drummers, too, the status came up because everybody was, you know, learning and stuff. So you do end up on the guitar. In fact, incredible on guitar. So you put that guitar away. How do you fucking get to be the fucking Bill Woodcock I know on guitar?
Well, 2 months later, I went to my first arena rock show, which was AC/DC at the Omni in Atlanta. And I went with some friends. And that was a really important turning point for me because I was inspired by Angus Young to become a guitar player. And I became a complete metalhead for like 2 or 3 years after that. But before that, I was listening to Devo, Plasmatics, Gary Newman, B-52s, that sort of stuff, Talking Heads, you know.
Well, Kiss
That's
is kind of
part of my boat.
Kiss is kind of AC/DC a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, these were like completely different times in my life.
Oh,
like,
different eras.
Buying,
okay.
I was buying Kiss records when I was 8, 9 years old. But
you know,
I didn't
Kiss.
See my first gig until, you know, I was like 13.
I saw Kiss maybe either 3 or 4 times before they even had that first album. And I remember when that album came out, it was so slow. Because they would open for anybody. Fucking, Savoy Brown or Wishbone Ash. I saw the 5-man version of the James game with Tommy Bolin. And yeah, so I, you know, Long Beach Arena here, we saw them a bunch. So, let me ask you this. So you see AC/DC, and you keep mentioning Atlanta, so you probably moved from the city right over to Atlanta, Georgia. So you see this gig. Do you go out and buy a guitar, your own guitar? You don't wait for a gift?
No. I don't. Absolutely not. No. As a matter of fact, I didn't even start playing guitar for another like 6 months or something like that. And it was just following, some personal crisis where it was pretty much like I got to figure something out. Otherwise, I could be one of those teens that commit suicide, you know. And
music was a lifeline.
It absolutely was. It absolutely was. It was a suggestion by a scoutmaster. I was in Boy Scouts at the time.
Thank you, Mr. Scoutmaster. Because usually, especially in those days, they thought like, fuck this. Well, maybe it was my days. Yeah, there was a more of a generation gap. Look, you gave me more object, foreign object I want to play.
Okay.
Turn. Whoa. Objecten verplaatsen van de ene naar de andere stapel. Als struikelend over lege blikjes vuilnis zakken kabels verstrikt. Dat vind ik echt, in een spinnenweb zit ik vast. En binnenin zit het dicht als een binnenvetter in de nek. Van broodnodig tot overbodig. Is er een methode om te bepalen wat ik lozen kan? Of wat ik zou moeten bewaren? Geef me een kader, ik blijf rondvaren. Laveer tussen kadavers door. Van kastje naar de muur strompelend over stoelen en tafels. Onvoorstelbaar, stelselmatig helpaarden in elke kamer. Vertel het maar, vertel snel, snel bestel, klaar. Achterschuif van de gemonteerde opwegsystemen. Volledig afgesloten kasten, een prachtig idee. Gelabelde kasten, mandelaren, Ikea, die leveren het aan, kan de klaar. Het wordt nooit als op het plaatje, een façade, het is karton. Achterprachtig afgeplakte plastic lagen. Wanneer je met een karate trap wordt een met hem maar. Meer, we willen altijd. Weer op de planten wachten op talloze stoflagen. Kapotte onderdelen die loslaten. De zon doet de kleuren van plastic en van een stof vervagen. Begint te jeuken, maar niet door het stoffige overschot. Ik pak een onbak knuppel en stamp zo die grote hoop kapot. Niks wegstoppen, vergeet compleet de doofpot. Nu de grootste aanhangwagen en de zo die shit erbovenop. Tegen de massaconsumptie, tegen de verspilling. Maar het echte leven verschilt te veel van de verfilming. We praten graag scriptmatig, dat geldt voor veel dingen. Laat die idealen maar varen vanuit de vering. Besteed gewoon meer. We willen altijd meer. Overal en altijd meer. Geen vijfertje, maar meer. Meer. We willen altijd meer. Overal en altijd meer. Geen vijfertje, maar meer.
Time.
our show. Start off that chunk of music with Foreign Object with Bigger Fish, then ESP Summer. It's a reissue, something from the 90s. When leaves are gone, they elaborate their restless and searching mental life in images without communicating them to others, perhaps because not communicating them with others. That's a fucking title, huh? Noisuka. You know, yesterday I played another trippy tune by them, Brother Pete there. Titles can carry a lot of power. Brand new from Holland, from Juan van de Dag, like the disillusioned person of the day or something in Dutch. Meer, I think that's C, maybe. Do you want to ride a bike with us from Gas Kunst? Yeah. Maybe if you want me to play something on the Water Pedro show, you don't put a comment on the instant ham. Or maybe you do. Mark Stewart, Mike Watt, KK No, with all my senses. This is the Sanskrit mix. Scott Crow put this out. It's actually a Grand Hart song. Brother Grand Hart. Man, I miss him. Kato Hideki with Against the Sky. 99 Letters. Shibun Gortsu. Mizutama Shobodan. Goblin's Eye. That had the singer Tenko. She went on to be just using her voice. Hidden Forces Trio with Raul Cantizano. This is Sevilla, Spain. El Tufatora. And finally, Psychedelicatessen with Thick Lick. Okay, so how do you get your first guitar? One that you want.
So this is the second time we lived in Germany. We moved back there. This time my dad did not put the guitar in storage. He brought it with us. So it was in the house. And after the scoutmaster said, you should just pick up a guitar, because he could tell I was into rock. And like I said, I already had the aspiration after I saw Angus Young. So I started putting my ear to the speaker and trying to figure out how to play a Motorhead song, Don't Need Religion. And then I started working on TNT. And I talked to my parents and I said, look, I feel like this is what I want to do. I'm really serious about it. Will you get me an electric guitar? And at that point, I wasn't even playing bar chords. I was playing single note, versions of these songs as if, you know, I still had bass in my blood for real. and they said, yeah, we'll get you a guitar on one condition. You got to learn how to play two songs. My dad chose House of the Rising Sun. My mom chose fucking Stairway to Heaven.
That whole Surfer albums. I thought she wanted you to learn that whole album.
That album wasn't out yet, actually.
And fucking Jeff Binkus, right? He's doing banjo these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good. He was on the show last year. So, okay. Man, that's not too bad a deal. We'll get you not just electric guitar, but probably a fucking amp to go with it.
Not at first. No, they got me. It was called Keynor was the brand. I think it was Dutch because they bought it in Amsterdam, and it was a SG copy. Didn't sound very good. Had really bad action. The neck was like a baseball bat, but it was all I needed. I loved it. And they got me a pair of headphones that had an amplifier built into it so that I wouldn't ruin their lives with a bunch of noise.
Okay.
And yeah, amp didn't come till later, unfortunately.
No, but at least you had the headphones, because I know cats who've tried learning, you know, just with electric guitar and no headphones, no amp.
It's rough.
That's rough. But it's also rough trying to get, like, kind of AC/DC Motorhead sounds out of an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, exactly.
So whatever you have, people, right? That's we jam Econo.
Right.
It's not just a slogan. It's a way of life. So you by any means necessary, I think Mr. Malcolm X said.
Yes.
So you went and learned, and you're autodidact. You self-taught.
Yeah, for a while. I did end up taking a guitar class in ninth grade, but it was a classical guitar class, and it really wasn't. Also, of course, wasn't what I wanted to be doing. It was like learning Green Sleeves and songs like that. But it was better than nothing. And I learned to read a little bit in that class. But my reading started really when I joined the high school choir. I joined high school choir, I think, in 1983. It was singing in the bass section. And then 1984, I auditioned for the London Honor Choir, and they accepted me. So I went and sang bass in their badass choir in London, which was a big turning point for me as well. Because I started meeting drama people, ended up getting into school plays. And that's where, like, in school plays, I got the bug for performing in front of people. And I was in musicals, so, and they knew I played guitar. So most of the plays I was in, they would wrangle me into being a guitarist at some place. But the first play I did was, I played Snowball the Pig in a musical adaptation of George Orwell's Animal Farm. And
Snowball is the fucking Trotsky character that becomes the enemy of Napoleon.
Precisely, yeah.
Now, your first gig then is singing with a choir in England.
Well, yeah, I mean, my first real gig, we did school choir stuff at home.
Okay.
But yeah, but my first gig, I went and traveled and rehearsed for the gig with an ensemble and then performed for a real audience was, yeah, in London, 1984.
What I'm trying to say is your first gig wasn't on the guitar. It was singing and part of a choir. Okay. So when did you first play your guitar? Well, it was in those plays, huh? In front of people.
In those plays. Yeah, exactly. And the thing was in Animal Farm, Snowball dies pretty early in the play. So then at that point, after I was off stage, then I played in the band on guitar. So that was also a guitar performance, probably my first one.
So the band had a guitar. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
In the old days, you would have been in the rhythm section.
Right. Right. And I was in the next play. We did Grease, and I was in that band, that rhythm section. And that has the distinction of being the first time that I improvised using a blues scale. The band leader just went, okay, go. And I wasn't even expecting it. He didn't say we're going to have to improvise. So I was put on the spot.
Old rock and roll, like Chuck Berry stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's a lot of chords. Yeah. Beautiful. Remember that movie, You Hail, Hail Rock and Roll?
Yes.
Or whatever. It's Mr. Chuck Berry and Keith Richard. He cannot get Carol right. No. That was so much. That was too much. That's happening. And it shows you the respect that Keith showed Mr. Berry, though. Yeah. Let me ask you this. What about after school, not graduating, but in the afternoon? Did you get into the garage band, bedroom band, basement band stuff?
No, I didn't. You know, I lived in a small village in Germany at that point, and I pretty much just spent my time isolated trying to figure out stuff on records, mostly like Black Sabbath records at that point.
You know what? I'm thinking early 80s, mid 80s, that's still that country called West Germany.
Yes, it was still West Germany at
that
point.
That's when Minutemen first toured over there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So whole different kind of dynamic and stuff. And so you're just woodshedding, right?
Yeah, just woodshedding. And, you know, the kids in school kind of, they knew I played guitar, but I felt ridiculed for it. Like they assumed I sucked. So that made me want to really work hard.
But wasn't there some cats who wanted to play aid and abet and join in with you?
Not really. I knew one person that drummed, but he was not serious and didn't even know any kit. So I think we had one opportunity to get into a room at school during school hours because the school had a kit. Yeah. And then I had a couple of Japanese friends who were guitar players, and we kind of jammed without a rhythm section and you know, somebody's bedroom or whatever. But no bands until the very first attempt I had at putting a band together was my senior year in high school. I was on the yearbook crew, and we had an assembly to sell yearbooks, and I asked if we could have a metal parody band to, you know, write a song about selling, you know, buying yearbooks. And they went for it. So it was kind of like a black metal parody where we did a song called Buy the Yearbook.
Well, look, man, desperate times call for desperate men. So let that freak flag fly, Brother Bill. We're at the end of the first hour, March 2, 2023, edition of Wapito Show special guest Bill Woodcock. Hold tight for hour two. March 2, 2023. It's the second hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
Sometimes times get so hard down here in downtown LA. You meet are pretty neat, but most of them are not okay. Well, it seems like a slice of paradise, but it comes at a price. It's my home, it's where I'll stay, downtown LA. Every day is a roll of the dice. At the American Hotel, we drink and we use drugs. I'm paying extra for the bed bugs. And the gentrification of downtown LA encroaches on the whole neighborhood, but we still get rats and roaches. Dumpster dive for cans and bottles. Every day the same cliche, photographers and models. So they impounded my truck to clear the street for a film crew. And the OPG laughed at me when I offered them an IOU. Get so hard down here in downtown LA. Some of the people that you meet are kind of sweet, but most of them need to get the hell away. Well, it seems like a slice of paradise or a piece of pinky pie. It's my home, it's where I'll stay. Downtown LA, it's where I'm gonna live and die.
Downtown LA. Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und so soll es immer sein. La 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 la, wenn ich über die Straße gehe und die vielen Hochhäuser sehe, denk ich mir, das Leben ist schön. So soll es ewig weitergehen. La la la, das Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und so soll es immer sein. Das Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und so soll es immer und ewig sein. Oh, ich bin so glücklich. Oh, ich bin so glücklich, la 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 li, la li 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 li. Fahre in einem Automobil, nicht, aber nicht, wird mir so viel. Das Leben ist schön, die Luft ist rein, und du.
Thank you. the voodoo queen.
Hey now, darling, where did you spend the night? You act in the picture, and you ain't on the ride. To Louisiana, gonna give it to the voodoo queen.
Start off the second hour, Lightning Woodcut with Hard Times in DTLA, downtown Los Angeles, people. All you sleuths. Alexander Hacka after that. Part two of his piece, his big opera. I chunk every edition until we get it done. It's got a trippy plot. It's got a fictional cat. I want to get to Brother Bill's journey through music, but I'll explain it later about this. It's interesting. Headboggle after that with Nickelodeon and Calliope. Another East Bay band, Rubber Rose Cement with Perihelion of Stupor. Scrapers Papers with Puffin' on My Chillum. Stain Remover. This is from Shiverboard, live at the House of Yarga in Philly, September 24, 2022. Found a Copper Penny, the demo version. Dan Jones and the Squids, Kansas City. Lightning Woodcock with Voodoo Queen. And I got to get him back because the fuckers, AT&T, don't maintenance their phone line. So when we get rain like SoCal has, well, the whole state really, I keep losing it. So let me get Brother Bill. Got him back, people. Okay, so let's pick it up from there. You make the fucking kind of pitch spiel for the yearbook. This is your first time putting together a band, and it's very focused. It's for this one tune, for this one event. Now, where is this? Is this in West Germany still?
Yeah, it was called the American International School of Dusseldorf at that time.
Ruhr Valley. And what big band people is from Dusseldorf? Kraftwerk. Another big band. 1979, a little before this period you're talking about. An album called Gay Rag, this band called Der Plan. Yeah, fucking bitchin' band. But so is Kraftwerk. Anyway, yeah, I learned something about Dusseldorf being the kind of rival of Cologne, even though they share that Rhine River. But that just shows you about humans.
Yeah.
They'll have a beef about anything. It don't matter. It does not matter. Okay. Let's get back to your story. You leave West Germany, right? Do you come back here?
Yeah, I graduated. Did perform at the graduation. They let me put a rock band together.
Okay.
And perform.
Is this the second band?
Second band, yes.
And what's the material?
It was a U2 cover.
So you get one tune.
They have to approve the material.
Okay, you get one tune. Okay.
Yeah, one tune.
And who are the cats? Classmates?
Classmates, precisely. Okay. Yeah, all friends.
So they'll do the fucking gig, but they won't do jams and pracs with you, huh? Well, those two guys from Japan yeah. did. Much respect. Big sonkei to them. Okay, you come back. Where do you go?
So I moved to Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I moved to Los Angeles in 1986.
You just missed the Minutemen.
I just missed the Minutemen. I missed a lot of things, actually. I arrived just in time for what seemed to be an endless display of really bad commercial hair metal.
A lot of butt rock Sunset Boulevard, right? A lot of butt rock. I think Iggy's got a song called Butt Rock.
Yeah, that was rough for me. I wasn't expecting that because by that point I had kind of transitioned away from metal. I was more into Jimi Hendrix and psychedelic rock, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and that kind of thing, you know.
Okay.
So I wasn't – I definitely wasn't ready for Poison and Cinderella and that kind of stuff. I just read the –
But
the,
you know what a farmer would tell you. You know what a farmer would tell you. If you want a good crop, use a lot of manure. I say, bring it, motherfuckers. So go on.
So I ended up working at a video store in North Hollywood called the Odyssey Video, and that's where I met my my musical partner for many years, Dave Perry, who unfortunately we lost last year.
Oh, yeah. So the Valley. You lived in the Valley.
We lived in the Valley, yeah, and we started this band called Psychedelicatessen there.
Oh, okay, so that's where that comes from. Okay, well what's this Foreign Object? When does this come around?
Foreign Object, there was a little bit of overlap. I think, thinking of my timeline, I think Foreign Object was started in 1993 or 1994. I think 1994 was when Foreign Object started. And Psychedelicatessen broke up in 1995. So those two bands were kind of running concurrently.
But when Psychedelicatessen start?
Psychedelicatessen started, I want to say, in maybe late 87 or early 88. And then we played our first gig in 1989 at Bebop Records in Reseda.
I remember Bebop Records. Renee.
Yeah. Renee? I thought his name was Richard, but I you know, my memory's not that great.
Maybe it was Richard, but there was a cat there named Renee that booked the Minutemen. We would do acoustic gigs there, like bongos and acoustic guitar. I want to play some Psychedelicatessen in the memory of. Thank you.
yours. Have you all a precious thing? Love as in dreams. Everyone a mystery. Someone stole a dream today. She'd save it for a rainy day. Scream quietly, all the neighbors will hear. Scream quietly, all the neighbors will hear.
Scream quietly, all the neighbors will hear.
for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with Psychedelic Contessin with Star Spangled Cracker. Then we had Eugene Chadbourne with White Brain, Greensboro. Alien Disguise 1. I guess there's a 2 also. A Lean on the House, Bombus Brandon. Plankton, but Plankton, okay? No K involved. Scream Quietly. That's a title. That's a weird command. Samuel Locke Ward at Iowa City with Descender. And finally, again, Psychedelicatessen with Bleed, but in parentheses, Postman. Like your, is it a tribute to your pop?
No, it's not actually.
Okay. Because I remember you saying him, letter carrier. So how did Psychedelicatessen come, you meet your musical partner guy, Dave Perry and stuff, but mm-hmm. you guys, how did you meet him?
So he started working there at the Odyssey. He had a
pomp- at the video store, right?
Okay. At the Odyssey video store, yeah. He had a pompadour and a brand new Elvis tattoo. And right away, I started busting his balls like, "Hey there, all you greasers! It's time for Sha Na Na."
Bowser. Bowser.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But he had a great sense of humor. We hit it off, and I noticed that he would put on 10 years After. And we would be staring at the TV together. I would put on Devo, and we'd be staring
home.
At the TV
together. My babe. Go home. That Woodstock thing, like 10 minutes of, like, methamphetamine blues. Okay. So you guys shared a lot of music times at the – well, there's probably a lot of downtime at the store, huh?
There was, yeah. So we figured out pretty quickly that we had similar tastes, and he was a drummer, and he had just left his band called Bad Kitchen. That was a touring around L.A. or playing around L.A. a lot at the time.
Okay.
And they were kind of like a funk rock band. And I really consider Psychedelicatessen to be my first band. The other two were, kind of thrown together for school things.
Right.
So this is really my first thing post-school, post-high school. And because I didn't really have a high school band, I definitely give Psychedelicatessen the distinction of being my first band.
And these are the first songs you're writing.
Yeah. Well, the first song I wrote was when I was still in high school. I wrote a song called Casper the Friendly Ghost on my Ouija board. And part of that ended up being part of that song Thick Lick that you played earlier. So, but yeah, Dave and I collaborated on everything. We really didn't write anything separate at that time. So it was really my first experience collaborating with somebody.
Well, tell me about that. Yeah, but a special collaboration, because people usually won't write with drummers. So how to describe that process?
Well, he was a singing drummer for one thing, and he also, liked to plunk around on instruments. So he would write parts on guitar or bass.
Ah, he didn't compose on drums. Because I'm really interested in drummers getting more involved with composition. Why not? I personally,
I'm of the opinion that when you put your fills in and all of the little bells and whistles that a drummer does that isn't just keeping a beat, that is part of the composition.
Oh, yeah, of course. But I'm talking about, like, from the get-go, when you bring it. Of course, aiding and abetting is a bitching thing, and I'm not dismissing it. But this idea of conceiving and conception, that too.
Well, in this case, with between Dave and me, we did a lot of improvising. That's where I really kept my teeth improvising with somebody. And the drums were part of the composition. We were feeding off each other.
Okay, I love that.
Inspire each other with ideas.
I just made an album where the drummer went first. He gave all 8 tunes of the album were only drums, and then he let me go. And then we brought it to the guitar man. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. March 2, 2023 edition, Watt Pedro Show special guest, Bill Woodcock. Hold tight for hour 3. March 2, 2023, it's the third hour, Watt from Pedro Show.
Sun, take three.
Peter?
Yes.
Would you say Bach and the Sun, take three, because I found you the one?
When I say that? Bach and the Sun, take three, because I found you the one.
Oh, wait. You have to do it again, Peter.
I want to come in there and listen to that last one. Bach and the Sun, take three. Bach and the Sun, take three, because I found you're the one.
Through the corridors of pennies on the dark side of town, you come to me all together with a full free type of frown. I peek at you, you freak with me, like uncommon swarm on anyone's totem pole. The pumpkin of God.
call me a disgrace.
Watch for Pedro Show. Started off the third hour with the Sucker Boys. This is the first time Watt got to fucking play with Brother Bill. Sucker Boy Lotto, a song I wrote for Bob Lee's Loteria comp. Tense thing to be part of. Soft White Underbelly after that, people. This is the band that later became Blue Oyster Cult. There's a different singer, different bass player, but Buck Dharma, Albert Bouchard, and Al Lanier are there. Bark in the Sun. These were like sessions and demos for Elektra, but CBS had ended up sounding BOC. Crane and Susan Loha with In Silence. Para Moasir from Boba Stereo Club and M. Takara. Waiting for Black Metal Records to come in the mail. And this is the demo, people. God, I wish I could hear what the finished baby sounds like. Have a Nice Life. And then Skills, Lightning Woodcock. That's with a Z, people. So, Foreign Objects comes at the tail end of Psychedelicatessen. Why did Psychedelicatessen just ran its course?
So, well, Psychedelicatessen, we did a lot of good stuff, but we didn't really accomplish much. I want to mention that we had seven different bass players in 7 years.
Whoa, and the first
bass player, even though he wasn't with us very long, he was extremely influential on the rest of my musical output. His name was Eddie Ruscha. He's the son of the artist Ed Ruscha.
Wow.
And Dave knew him, brought him in. It felt really good to play with him. He felt perfect for us. And he, you know, we didn't even know what we're trying to do. What does this sound like? Is it? It doesn't really feel like punk rock or whatever. And Eddie said, you know what? You guys remind me of the Minutemen. And it was the first time I'd even heard of the Minutemen at that point. I was like, how can that be? I don't even know who that is.
Do you remember a club in Atlanta called 688?
I do not.
Okay, that's where we first played. There was Hig had a set list painted on the bulkhead. But it became the Metroplex later. Same owner. We were around, you know, the only thing new is you finding out about it sometimes. It's just the way, especially in those days, right? There's not as much, you had to have the right fanzines and stuff.
Right.
So I don't blame you, but that's really interesting that,
Dave knew of you though. Sorry.
Okay. Foreign Objects.
Yeah. Well, before I move on real quick, I just wanted to say why Eddie Ruscha was so influential is because he's the one who turned us on to Butthole Surfers, Captain Beefheart, Magma, Can, all those bands. So where I was in a point in my life where, okay, I don't like where music's at today, boom, all this stuff came into my sphere and really kind of changed everything. We went from, okay, we want to do something that's kind of inspired by the psychedelia of Hendrix and the Doors to, no, let's go down this scary road of, like, really gnarly psychedelic shit.
Right, right. Yeah, that's – well, when I was younger and first eating Alice shit, I always wanted to trip balls. So it was like, who wants an easy Grateful Dead ride, man? Put on that first fucking Pink Floyd album.
Yeah.
Or that Radioactivity Kraftwerk record with the headphones and the – I'm the antenna, send information. Oh, man. When you go, Toyoo! And it's that stereo through your brain. We're talking about some brain floss, people.
Yeah, so, Revolution number 9, that kind of stuff.
What happened? In Revolution number 2, part 2, right? Gary Shandling. Minuteman played with Butthole Surfers and Big Boys, the first Hollywood gig. Those guys come from Texas to play here.
Incredible.
Yeah, good guys. Giddy had this big, like, looked like a gallon jug of Vaseline. He says, we're going to have a party tonight. It was a Grandia room. It turned into a new wave place called Martini Lounge later, but it was Mexican Chow Pad in those days. Let me ask, so you get into Foreign Object. Now, the music there is a little quicker.
Yeah, it's all punk, deliberately punk. And that was an idea by another dearly departed friend of mine, Stefan X De Leon, who told me that he wanted to start a punk rock wrestling band. And I was like, okay, man, that sounds fun, but I didn't really consider myself to be in the running to be in it. But then he approached me and said, will you do this with me? And laid out the idea. And I'm like, yeah, I would love to. It sounds fun.
You know, punk to me, because I come from 70s punk, and it wasn't really fat. Some of it was very slow. Look at Throbbing Gristle, Hamburger Lady. I mean,
yeah, scary song.
Yeah, that. Really scary. So I think it was anything you could get up on the stage. But by the early 80s in hardcore and stuff, yeah, it became fast guitar music. But it wasn't that in the set. It was like fucking anything. You didn't know what was going to be out of gig.
Well, I remember thinking that punk rock sounded like Blondie from reading Cream magazine.
Why not?
Blondie hanging out with the Ramones and the Sex Pistols or whatever, you know?
What about that tune, Ripper to Shreds?
Oh, yeah, yeah. For
you
sure.
Know
I mean,
her.
Definitely Blondie is a punk band. I mean, they kind of evolved into a disco punk band.
I got to do the whole first Ramones album with Clem Burke. That guy can play some drums. Mickey, Joey's brother, had us do the 40th anniversary. I want to play this Outlaw Mariachi.
Great.
Still said no.
Off for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. We started to chunk off with the Outlaw Mariachi and Fight for Your Right to Party. Adam Yauch is very much missed. Man, I love
yes,
that.
Yes.
Great bass man. Great rapper, too. Library's on fire after that with Magic Bum Rush Hearts. Sir Richard Bishop's Freak of Araby Ensemble with something live here. Cal El Lazi Kadham. Lum and the Texas Homewreckers out of Fukuoka, Pan, with God Damn You Osaka Girls. I think the guy's a gaijin. He's from Portland, Oregon, but he moved there, married into a family. Started his own family there. Finally, Ms. Derringer, Black Tears. So hip us to the Outlaw Mariachi, Brother Bill.
The Outlaw Mariachi is a band I'm currently have been playing with since about 2 years ago. And they are a band that does Latin style arrangements of mostly classic rock songs. Like they do a mariachi version of a Rammstein song, so it's not all classic rock. And they do more traditional mariachi as well. And I got wrangled into that, not knowing anything about how to play mariachi. And it's been like one of the most educational experiences of my life.
But wouldn't you say that's proof in the pudding that fucking music is music and fuck these goddamn genre labels?
Absolutely.
And brand. Yeah, I hate it. Fucking Gulag, Berlin Wall shit.
It's been the bane of my existence ever since Psychedelic Attestant, because we were a genre defining band, and that's what everybody always like, what kind of music do you play? It's like, well, we're trying to do everything.
I think that's bitching and noble, and I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah, this other shit, it's for stuff that ain't musical. That's what like armies do, to wear the right uniform so they know that's why they got angry at the Viet Cong, I guess, because they wore black pajamas. But look, fuck genre, people. It's the enemy of fucking the soul of music. And what are your plans now? Where can people find you on the internet? Let's let them know that. Do you have a website?
No, I don't have a dedicated website anymore. I kept lightningwoodcock.com for as long as made sense. I let it go years ago. Right now, the best place to get music of mine, if you're interested in that sort of thing, is Bandcamp, Lightning Woodcock. There's no G at the end of lightning. It's not lightning. It's lightningwoodcock.bandcamp.com.
Yeah, it's corporate, but they treat bands a lot better than any of those other fucking music places. But one day you might want to get that website back, because it's like having your own fanzine and nobody's going to filter your shit.
Well, I hit a wall with Lightning Woodcock where I got tired of trying to be a brand and move product and stuff. And that was like a large reason why I transitioned away from that. It's maybe not something I want to cling on to as a position.
Well, I didn't say that. I said more like a fanzine.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Also, me and you got a plan, right, with Bob Lee.
Exactly, and that's what I'm excited to be working on right now as well, is this record that I'm working on with Bob Lee.
It's going to be more than just a record. We want to do gigs with these fucking tunes also.
Fuck yes, we do.
Yes. People, me and Bob Lee brought 12 tunes to Brother Bill here, and he's finding his way with them and stuff, and when they're ready, we're going to fucking play them. We're going to record them, you know, make an album, but then we're going to put them in your face live, too, if you want to witness them. Okay. Yeah, I can't wait, but there's no pressure on you. No, like Mr. Wells learned us, right? No wine before it's time. As soon as you get some other stuff going, like recordings of your mariachi or whatever you got going, please come back on the show. The invite's open to you, Brother Bill.
Thank you. Yeah, we are working on a record right now. Hopefully it'll be out later this year. And they're constantly playing county fairs and casinos, like almost every weekend. I'm not always with them because I got other gigs too, but they're always worth checking out if you're into music.
Okay. Can't wait to hear what you're doing too. People, it's been the March 2, 2023 edition of Wild Pedro, so keep your powder dry.